This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and fired up for today, friend of the pod, good man, Ari Wasserman, will join us here as we are 173 days away as we record this on Monday, March 9th from week zero. Mr. Wasserman on Three Sports, Andy and Ari, one of the many college football betting or podcasts that is in my rotation. Mr. Wasserman, how has your offseason been treating you? Is there such a thing anymore in college football?
I went to Vegas over the weekend and won like $3,000 playing 1-3 poker on Friday night. So I'm feeling pretty good about it.
I didn't.
Yeah. Well, Tim, you got to understand, my wife is from there, and it's family time. And a lot of our closest friends that she grew up with live there. So we'll be back in 2 weeks for the first weekend of March Madness. I'm in Vegas a lot, man. I come to Vegas, you know, 7-8 times a year. And let me tell you, I know a lot of people who listen to this might live there. If you don't, marrying a girl who's from there is quite the life hack, because you go back to see friends. You go back for holidays. Her grandmother lives in Summerlin. It is quite lovely to have Thanksgiving in Vegas. So, I love coming out there, and I'm a degenerate gambler to anybody who listens to our show. And if you don't, and you're hearing from me for the first time, I'm one of you. So thanks for having me on. I appreciate you, always, respecting our work and asking us to come on. And it's a pleasure to be here with you, Tim.
Well, I mean, it's if you're a college football fan, it's one of the best, especially all year round. So I truly mean it. And I love the content you guys pump out. And I want to start with something that I'm sure you got your fair share of criticism, because college football trolls, they and gambling trolls, you put them two together, boy, it's a
quite
fun
the cocktail,
group
yeah.
to be a part of. But you put out your list of top 10 quarterbacks, I want to say maybe a month ago or 3 or 4 weeks ago, whatever it was.
I should have seen this coming, because you're a Notre Dame guy.
No. It has nothing to do with CJ Carr. because I went through it last week on the podcast, and before we get into your list, Ari,
yeah,
I think that 2026 is going to be the year of the quarterback. I mean, you go up and down the list, and I know, yeah, I'm a Notre Dame fan. Everyone who listens to this podcast knows it, and you had CJ Carr at 10, but I don't think that's like the craziest thing in the history of the world. Some people have him at 1, Bill Conley, but I think you can make an argument for like I don't want to say 20 quarterbacks to be one, but Ari, you go up and down the list, and I was going through it, like the preseason top 25, like we're not even talking about Lenora Sellers right now. We're not talking about John Mateer, and it felt like those two guys were like the hottest quarterbacks coming into 2025. So as a college football fan and as bettors, it feels like this year has the potential just to be phenomenal when you look at the quarterback position.
So last year felt that way too, but last year was more speculative assets than it was proven players. So like that is what I think is really interesting about this, like going through lists and ranking quarterbacks 1 through 10, when you have so many players who are returning after having very productive seasons is more difficult. Like last year, you know who was number one on my list going into last year? And I wear it like a embarrassing badge of honor. DJ Lagway. But with DJ Lagway, I was going off of measurables and potential and not proven production. So this year, if you have CJ Carr at 10, like people take that as an insult. If I think you're a top 10 quarterback in college football going into the season with this group of guys, that's a pretty great place, in my opinion. And like really think about it. There's 130 plus quarterbacks who play. You're in the top 7% of quarterbacks in college football, and the difference between 4 and 10 is pretty negligible. And if you go through the list from 1 to 10, like you can make a straight-faced argument for why those players are ranked ahead, and you can make a straight-faced argument for why CJ Carr should be number 1. And I think that, you know, maybe I will be wrong and he will be the Heisman winner, but also if the Heisman winner is represented on this list anywhere, I'll feel good about that, especially after the terrorist attack that my list became a year ago. And DJ Lagway is still playing. Lenora Sellers isn't on the list. He's still playing.
Yeah.
These are guys that if you wouldn't have had in the top 10 a year ago, we're not even considering the players that we're not considering. So, you know, I think that for the most part, the order might be wrong, but I think I put the right 10 guys.
No, and I really wanted you to, it said nothing to do with CJ Carr. It was more for me about just how loaded this list is and how loaded college football is. And when you look at the Heisman race, to your point, and, you know, whatever sports book you want to look at, you know, you're going to be able to look down that board, Ari, and say, hey, I can make a case for this quarterback or that quarterback. I mean, hell, last year I felt like I got a bunch of texts last year saying, like, why do you hate John Mateer? I'm like, I don't hate John Mateer. I just want to see it happen. And now I feel like John Mateer is wildly underrated heading into this year.
Yeah. And again, anybody who doesn't like the list can make their own, and then we will criticize you for leaving off players that probably have a case to be on it. And
I know you're not criticizing Mendoza on my list last year, Ari.
Yeah, I mean, John Mateer was on my list last year, too. But that's the other thing with proven statistical output, and we haven't read the list yet, so for people who haven't heard it, let me just read it real quick.
Yep.
Arch Manning, Dante Moore, Sam Leavitt, Julian Sain, Josh Hoover, Gunnar Stockton, Jaden Maiava, Darian Mensah, Brendan Sorsby, CJ Carr. Very good players. Yeah. Now, which one of those players, just, and this is, I'm not putting you on the spot. Let's just do it from a, you know, just a fun game scenario. Yeah. Who are you removing from the list for John Mateer? Like, and then that's when it starts getting tricky. And then if you say, whoever you say, somebody will be like, you're full of shit, man. Right. Like, it's like, there's no winning. But that's kind of the reason why we do it too. It's a nice general exercise. And I do think that if you believe that somebody is absent on this list, and they play for a big brand like Oklahoma, then because this is a gambling podcast and you believe that person is much better than he's represented on this list, then that might be your window of opportunity to put your money where your opinion is and go hit him as a long odds future for the Heisman this year.
Yeah, I mean, you look back at last year, and I mentioned it, you know, a week ago, Fernando Mendoza was 80-1, you know, in the preseason. And yeah, look, you're never, you know, because Cignetti is now, like, it was year one, it was like, all right, that's cool, but you're not going to win the title. Now, in 2 years, Indiana has gone to the playoff as a, you know, 100-1 or further long shot, and then the follow it up to win the national title and win the Heisman Trophy. You will never, ever get a Indiana team with value ever again, Ari. The sports books have learned that long enough. And, you know, to go back to the list real quickly, you made this list before the Trinidad Chambliss stuff got cleared up.
That's right.
I mean, I'd imagine he's in your top 10. So, I mean, it's, once again, I just, back to the point of, as gamblers and as we get more into the thick of it and when spring practice all wraps up and hopefully there's no catastrophic injuries, I mean, you're going to be able to make a case for so many quarterbacks. I mean, you look at, you know, I'm not saying Rocco Beck's going to win the Heisman Trophy, but he's started a million college football games, and he's still in college. You know, he's at Penn State now.
You know, the thing I don't know, and you're probably more keen on this than I am, you know, thinking about gambling 24, I think about it too. I'm just lose. You're thinking about it from a professional standpoint, but is that because college football is more wide open than it's ever been before, and because players can pop off at any place now? Because back in 2015, being the quarterback at Indiana almost disqualified you.
Right.
Because in order to win the Heisman, you also have to usually play on a good team or be dynamic enough at the... When's the last time a quarterback won the Heisman on a bad team? Like, I can't even remember. Like, Travis Hunter won the Heisman on a bad team, but Travis Hunter was an alien that played both sides of the ball.
I mean, I don't consider the Baylor team that RG3 was on a bad team. I don't consider Florida with Tebow a bad team. They didn't win the title. They had multiple losses, but they weren't bad teams, right?
Yeah. So, but back in the day, being on a bad team was basically a disqualifying metric for quarterback Heisman winners. And now you can't even eliminate Indiana from the bad team category or a team that's not good enough, because anybody at this point can pop out of nowhere with the right portal acquisitions and win the national title. So now if you are thinking about Rocco Becht, you know, why not Penn State? why not anybody else? Why not Oklahoma? Why not teams that we're not necessarily anticipating will be, you know, why not one of the two quarterbacks who are currently battling for Tennessee's starting job? Like, they literally can come out of nowhere. And, you know, we should have seen Indiana coming. Like, with hindsight, it's kind of like, yeah, well, we had them in the top 20, but, like, no one really took it seriously. Like, they could go win the Heisman or win the national championship. It's like, now, if you are a team that brings back a lot of really good players that are going to be drafted high from a team that went to the playoff the year before, man, that's a pretty solid bet. I just don't know if they're ever going to do 100-1 anymore on anybody, unless you're awful. Like, the fact that Indiana was 100-1 as a playoff team that returned the bulk of their roster, that seems like a Vegas misstep more than a place for gamblers to, like, find the number there. Like, that was wild.
Well, they were 100-1 2 years ago to make the playoff. Last year, they were around, I think it was like 150 to win the title. They were, I think, 8 or 9 to 1 to make the playoff. And obviously, they did everything. And here we are. So I'm glad we're talking Indiana because, you know, we could talk about all these quarterbacks, Ari. What do you make of the fit of Josh Hoover to Indiana? And is it at this point just say, well, it's Kirk Cignetti. He's a talented quarterback. He's going to work there. How do we put everything together with Indiana busy in the portal? They get one of the best quarterbacks available in the portal. What are your expectations of Hoover in Bloomington?
Well, Josh Hoover was, if you remember, when Nico Iamaliava last spring shocked the world and entered the portal and left Tennessee kind of late in the process there. Like, Josh Hoover was the quarterback that everybody was like, oh, wow, maybe he'll be Tennessee's solution. And I believe that they even tried and he wasn't interested and stayed at TCU. So, like, the fact that he now entered the portal, you know, it's not like people are just discovering he's good for the first time. Like, right. His name was out there a year ago. And I believe last year he threw for 3,500 yards and 29 touchdowns. Now, people didn't watch them because TCU wasn't a very good team, or it wasn't at least involved in interesting matchups that people who just, like, watched the game casually would have caught. But he's a high-level quarterback. And I can't stand, like, the, well, he's just Kurt Cignetti. Everything he's going to do is going to work forever. It's like, I think people have short memories of, you know, how things go in this sport and how everything ebbs and flows. And, you know, I anticipate that Indiana will be a very good team. I would be shocked if they were dominant again. I mean, they lost the number one overall pick and the Heisman winner. They're losing Elijah Surratt. You know, D'Angelo Pons is one of the most underrated corners in the entire country because he's small, but he's still an amazing mm-hmm. player. They are losing a lot of players. They're bringing some back. They're going to be good. But, like, if your idea is like, well, it's Kurt Cignetti, I'm going to go bet Josh Hoover to win the Heisman because he's, I mean,
we used to do that with Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, that worked. So maybe this is the beginning of that. But, you know, Kurt Cignetti did something that has changed, or at least altered how we analyze the sport in general. And I don't know if that means that Indiana is just going to be the new blue blood, or if Indiana was the first of a bunch of new teams that are going to try to, like, duplicate what they did. But I anticipate that Josh Hoover will have a very good year for them. Does that mean that I think they're going to win the Heisman or they're going to win the national title? Probably not. But I think that based on system and like, he's even Curtis Rourke from Ohio 2 years ago had a really good year at Indiana. Mm-hmm. They clearly know what they're looking for. They know who fits in their system and they know how to get the most out of that player. And I think that Hoover is going to have a very good year, which is why he's so high on my list. Like, when we go back to the beginning of how we started this, it's like, part of it too was situation, supporting cast, which ones are going to be most productive and all those things. And it's like, it wasn't just like, if I was starting a college football team right now, which player would I take first? It's about, I did it from the standpoint of who do I think is going to have the best years. And like, because you're a Notre Dame fan, and I will indulge you a little bit, like, I worry about CJ Carr's supporting cast. He's not going to have the best running back duo since Felix Jones and Darren McFadden anymore. You know, who is their number one receiver right now that you know for sure is going to be like Elijah Surratt? It's hard. And maybe Jaden Gatehouse will come out and have a great year, or maybe one of the portal pickups they got, you know, Mylon Graham is one, you know, might have a good chance of doing that. I'm not saying that he doesn't have it. But now that CJ Carr is the engine of Notre Dame's team, he has to prove that he's amazing on a whole other level that he didn't have to prove a year ago. And he might do it and he might not. But you also have to take into account when you're talking about the Heisman and who's going to be great, who's around them, what's their schedule look like, how are they going to fit into the national discourse, all those things. And like Fernando Mendoza really caught lightning in a bottle last year.
Yeah, I mean, you look at CJ Carr. There's no way on March 9th, Ari, I'm going to say, you got to bet CJ Carr to win the Heisman Trophy.
I mean, when who bets the favorite anymore anyway?
Yeah, I mean, you can't.
Is he the favorite right now?
He is the favorite at a number of sports books. So, I mean, I get it. I understand why, because it's an easy schedule. He wears a gold helmet. They're going to be a preseason top five team. But, I mean.
Yeah, and they play. Yeah, and they'll probably be in the playoff.
Right. I mean,
and he'll also have an interesting story, too. Like, Notre Dame got spurned last year. If you're a Notre Dame guy, you probably hate that. And you use that to fuel. You could see him on a stage next January saying, last year no one believed in us. You know, like, I mean, the whole thing can happen. So I understand why he's the favorite. The question is it's a huge sport with a bunch of teams, and a lot of which could just jump out of nowhere. Betting the favorite seems like just, what is he, like 9-1? Like, that's awful odds for something that's so hard to do.
Right. I mean, you look down the board. I mean, look, I still love Damon Williams. I don't know if he can win the Heisman, but he's, you know, in that 50-1 range. What is Byron Brown going to look like when he goes to the SEC? We mentioned Rocco Becht, Avery Johnson. I mean, 2 years ago, Ari, I was in, you know, Big 12 media days, and the talk of Vegas was Avery Johnson. I had a Kansas State, I think he was some blogger or something like that. Maybe it had a couple too many pops at Circa, but he comes up to me, goes, how does Avery Johnson not win the Heisman Trophy in 2024? I'm like, I don't know, buddy. Maybe they won't be that good. But I mean, you look down up and down that list. So I would circle back to just,
I mean, like, Keelan Russell is +8,000.
Yeah.
That could be the Alabama starting quarterback. Like, I mean, like, when I'm betting on the Heisman, I don't want to bet on the player. Like, if I was going to do a short odds one, I would do Arch, because he's just made to win the Heisman and their team is stacked around him. But if I was, you know, going to scroll down the list, I mean, I see Rocco Becht is +6,500, but like Keelan Russell, who's from Duncanville, like in the area that I grew up in, five-star quarterback who might or probably will win the Alabama job this year. That's like, why would you rather allocate your money and tie it up for that long with somebody who's going to pay you 8-1? That doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I totally agree. But you in your top 10, you had four quarterbacks that transfer. We mentioned Josh Hoover already. What fit do you like the most from a transfer quarterback? And I'm not even saying from a Heisman standpoint, but, you know, will lead to some wins or lead to maybe a playoff run. You've got Leavitt going to LSU, Mensah going to Miami, Sorsby going to Tech. I mean, you can even go a little bit further down the list. You know, Austin Simmons is going to Missouri. Aaron Filo is going to Florida. Where are some of the fits that you like the most when it comes to transfer quarterbacks?
I mean, if you use the word fit, like Rocco Becht really comes to mind, because I like guys who are going with their coach to help install the system. Like, there's no better fit than being the person that you build around, right? Aaron Filo, too, as somebody who is going with his offensive coordinator from Georgia Tech to Florida. Like, these are fits, you know, and that is kind of what really stands out to me whenever somebody leaves a place. Now, if you're thinking about really good players who are just taking a new route of things, it's very hard not to like what Sam Leavitt brings to the table at LSU. Sure. I mean, like, obviously, Lane Kiffin is the person who took Trinidad Chambliss and turned him into one of the most electric quarterbacks in the entire country, and basically did it by accident, because he wasn't even the starter when they started the year. He comes in as after an injury, and all of a sudden he's playing in a highly contested game deep in the college football playoff. And now when you look at the pieces that LSU has built around him, you know, it's really hard to fathom how LSU isn't at least an excellent team this year. So Sam Leavitt, to me, I think, is one of the more undervalued players. Now, he got paid a lot of money, but I think traditionally speaking, like, he's been kind of overshadowed by like Cam Scataboo when he was at ASU. And last year he was injured and they weren't as good as they were the year before, but like, he's a really good player. So, you know, those are the ones that stand out to me the most.
Let's take a quick break and we'll dive into a little bit more. Yet a pretty fun article put out, the juiciest games of 2026. We'll dive into that a little bit. So a quick break, more with Ari Wasserman on the other side. All right, we're back. More with Ari Wasserman on Three Sports. Andy and Ari, the podcast. Make sure you get it wherever you get your podcast. How many guys, you guys pump out an episode, what, three times a week? I feel like every time I open up my iTunes feed, I'm like, oh,
buddy, it's more than that. Five times a week, every day at 3 Eastern time. 1 hour episodes, 5 days a week. So, and then in the off season, like, you know, you got to fill it up. People still want their ball talk. And you know, and like with college football now too, Tim, like you got lawsuits and coaches, contracts, and, you know, it's just so much stuff happening all the time. We figure it out. Now we also make some stuff up, you know, we got to figure out a way to, you know, get through the off season, and we start talking about cheeseburgers at the end of episodes sometimes and things. But I do think that college football used to be the best sport in the world to cover professionally because you had a very intense 4 month period. But once the season was over, like you had 8 months of kind of like, you know, recharge mode. Like in the NFL, you got mini camp and NFL draft and all these different things that are year round, you know, free agency periods, you know, cap space discussions, all these things. And like college back in the day before the portal, it was just like, who do they recruit on February 1? You sign that, and then you have from, you know, spring practice, then you have from basically the middle of May until, or sorry, the middle of April and early May to August, September without really much going on. And that's just not the case anymore. There's stuff happening year round.
I know it's, you know, for us doing a gambling podcast, we've been starting this earlier and earlier every year. And now this is the earliest we've ever started it. But you've got Heisman odds, you've got schedules to kind of look at, you've kind of pick out your spots. Hey, this team.
Well, that's where people make the most money, right? I mean, you make the most money hitting the long shot that you think is, and like there's a lot of long shots of really good teams. Like sometimes I look at like the NFL futures and I'm like, okay, do I really want to bet that the Cleveland Browns are going to win the Super Bowl? Like, and I know that sometimes teams in the NFL pop out from nowhere. Like the Patriots this year were a long shot, and you know, they had a pretty good schedule and Drake May played well and they almost did it. But like in college, you can pick a team in April that, if you know your stuff, is legitimately one of the five best teams in college football. So like it is, I think there's more hay to be made in college because there's more teams, there's harder to keep track of, and the rosters are so transient. The hardest thing, Tim, like if Tyreek Hill leaves the Dolphins and goes to the Chiefs, you kind of have an idea of what the Chiefs are getting. If a five-star player who has never taken a snap at left tackle moves because he's buried on the depth chart at Georgia and he wants to leave, completely made up scenario, but happens all the time, and then becomes a starting left tackle at Florida State, there's no real way to evaluate, why did he leave? Why didn't he play earlier? How good is he going to be? How much of an impact is he going to have on his new team? There is so much roster movement that's borderline anonymous that it's kind of hard for the books to wrap their arms around it. But if you know that this kid was a five-star player and has freak measurables and is going to a place that is filling in a hole that they had last year but returns a lot of talent, and he knew, you know, that the player that they got fills that hole, you can make some money, I think. And it's just not like that. There's too much information and there's too much film in the NFL to really get those edges that you, I think that like the college is like a really good place to have an edge.
Well, I think this is a decent transition here because one of the teams that we talked about a lot on this podcast last summer was North Texas. Their win total, let me double check, I think it was 5.5 last year. And obviously we were able to cash that because they started 6-0 and ultimately, you know, almost had an undefeated regular season. And I know you had Eric Morris on your pod recently, the new head coach of Oklahoma State. It was a nightmare of a season a year ago for Mike Gundy, and he led to his, you know, ousting. But you've got North Texas essentially headed over to Oklahoma State, and Drew Mestemaker put up gaudy numbers at North Texas. Is Oklahoma State going to be a team that is going to be under the radar? Or are we going to give them too much love this offseason because North Texas went 11-1 last year in the regular season?
I mean, I think their win total is like 6 or something, right? Like they're not that high up on the boards, if I remember correctly. You would know this off the top of your head probably more than I would. But the thing that is different about that is you're moving up a level, mm-hmm. and you're not quite sure how that will translate when you're playing better teams week in and week out. But certainly, anybody who knew about Oklahoma State last year, we had Mike Gundy on the podcast from Big 12 Media Day last year. And he was talking about how they didn't have any money and, you know, they didn't really get their portal class all squared away till the spring, and that he didn't coach any of the new players on his team, and that like 80% of the roster's first practice will be the first day of fall camp. And the way that he was talking on our show, you could have put together like, wow, if this is all the way he views it, this is going to be a disaster. And then turned out it was. They have certainly righted the ship. And I think Mike Gundy is a legend. What he did at Oklahoma State, man, wow. Like, he is forever a legend, but there are certain coaches that are not built to be in this new era. And I don't think that college football fans, Tim, have really wrapped their minds around, you know, in 2024, there's a line in the sand now between old way and new way.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some coaches, like Kirby Smart, for instance, who, you know, have excelled in both. But you need to pick the coaches that you think are able to exploit this system, because there is going to be a mass exodus of old badass coaches, or coaches who were highly successful in the old system that cannot operate in the new one. Like, I think that Dabo Swinney, for instance, is a very interesting case study in this. He is one of the few coaches in college football who turned a solid program into an elite one. And he did it during the confines of the old rules, which was transfers were rarer. You had no compensation of the athletes. You sold the program in different ways. And now they're in this new era and they've completely lost everything. They don't know how to do it anymore, it looks like. And now, to wrap it back to Oklahoma State, you're hiring a new coach that exists in this era that brings in a quarterback that has an amazing story and has a rocket arm. I don't know how good the North Texas players who are going to Oklahoma State are going to be weekly in Big 12 play, but I think just based on the way that the roster has been managed, the fact that those players are going to be around for spring, all the things that are happening, it should be a night and day scenario from Oklahoma State was a clown show last year.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know what their win total is, but if you think they're going to go out and win the Big 12, you know, it's possible. You know, you never know. I don't know if I'm looking at it from that standpoint, but what I do know is that they're highly functional in a way that they weren't a year ago at this time.
Well, it's going to be fun. Week two, they bring in Oregon, top five team. Lost that game 69-3 a year ago, 28-29 point underdog. That was the week Mike Gundy spouted off talking about Oregon. And
because he knew what was going to happen. He knew what was going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That he was explaining why what was going to happen happened before it happened.
That's what he saw into the future. And he was right. And that might have been one of the few times I laid four touchdowns all season. I don't like to lay points, but you knew what was coming down that freight train.
Yeah. You don't often get the coach telling you in a microphone that we're going to lose by 100 before it happens. So next time that happens, be sure to take advantage of it, because I was right there with you. When he said that, I went, the first thing I heard was 28 points is not enough. And it, sure enough, it wasn't.
It was not. Yeah, it was not. And, you know, Dan Lanning, when he's got a chance, when someone makes him mad, he's gonna take it out.
Explaining why they were going to get blown out to a person in an insulting way that takes offense to those things.
Right. Yeah. It was a perfect storm of everything.
If he wouldn't have said that, they might have lost 35-0 and covered still, but it might not have been quite as embarrassing.
But looking ahead, foreshadowing, I mean, we're going to get Oklahoma State as 3+ home touchdown dogs on in week number two.
But yeah, you might overthink it and go the other way on it this time.
You never know. But let's dive into an article you guys have got up over at On3, the most intriguing games, the juiciest games, I guess I should say, of the college football season. Number one, I think I love it. LSU at Ole Miss. Is this going to be the best atmosphere of the entire college football season, week three, LSU going to Ole Miss?
I mean, I don't know about the loudest, but atmosphere-wise, this is like literally what college football is. I mean, like, you know how crazy it is that like Lane Kiffin made this decision and all this happened. Like, this schedule was made already. They didn't do this for promotion standpoint. Like, right. This is just the way it was going to be. If Lane Kiffin were Ole Miss's coach still, they would be playing this game at this time. To have Lane Kiffin, the biggest troll in college football, reassembling one of the biggest powers in college football and going back to the place in his first SEC game that he spurned before the playoff is peak drama in a way that you can't even manufacture if you try. Like, if this was WWE, they would write that, you know? And I think that this is definitely, like, a cannot-miss game. We're going to be there, all those different things. It's just... This is number one on everyone's list. You know, you make lists about quarterbacks and biggest offseason acquisitions and all these things. You're going to get a big variation of results and answers from different people who have different opinions. Any other person in my business, your business, that made this list has this game number one. It's not even a debate. And if you don't, you're an idiot. Like, period. Like, it is peak drama. And I don't know. You listen to the show, so you know this about me. I like feelings and drama more than football. So, like, when you can mix those things together and then also have a very intriguing game against two teams that should be in the CFP mix, like, that is as close to synthetic drugs that you could make for me. Like, that's perfect. I cannot wait.
Yeah, that game is, I mean.
I don't know what synthetic drugs are. I've just been rewatching Breaking Bad.
You were just in Vegas, you know.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. No line out yet. I haven't seen one on this one, but certainly if Ole Miss is a home dog, that'll be.
I think they'll probably be like a 5.5 or 6 point underdog.
Ooh, buddy.
If I had to guess.
That you talk about drugs, getting a ramped up Ole Miss team as a home dog in a spot like that. Oof, buddy. It's going to be hard to pass up. No doubt.
Yeah.
You talk about narratives. I don't think it's the same. It's not the same level, but as a Notre Dame fan, I think that Miami game on November 7th and that day just in general, November 7th is a day. I talked about it last week on the pod. If you have anything scheduled, if your aunt or your cousin is getting married, tell them you're not going to the wedding because November 7th is outrageous. That Notre Dame Miami atmosphere is going to be one of the best Notre Dame Stadium atmospheres. I was at the Notre Dame Ohio State game a couple of years ago, the last second touchdown for the Buckeyes. That was really good. I was at the 05 Bush push game. That was insane.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
I think this is going to be up there as one of the best atmospheres, assuming, Ari, both these teams live up to what we expect. And Notre Dame's undefeated going into that game, and Miami is undefeated or with one loss. Having that at number three, I really had no issue with that one either. I think everything from Miami got in over Notre Dame and, you know, everything that you could imagine, and then Miami's run to the title game is going to lead to that place being at an all-time level.
Yeah.
And you throw in the fact that it might be cold, too, for a Miami team will help.
And you throw in the fact, too, that both programs are still in the beginning cross-sections of their, like, builds. Like, Notre Dame is established because they made it to the title game the year before. But both of these programs crave consistent winners. And, you know, I don't know, both programs also, I think you can make the case that Miami's schedule is even easier than Notre Dame's next year. I don't know if you've looked at it, but, you know, they both have a pretty advantageous path. So it is very possible that both teams are undefeated going into that game, or it's a game between two teams with one loss. My hope is that, you know, it's between good on good or great on great. And I don't know if, like, it will play out the way that it did last year, where it's for a playoff spot. Mm-hmm. I think it's possible that both are comfortably in by the time you get to that point. But I really don't know. Like, I'm like public enemy number one in Notre Dame world right now. They think, you know, I was like their hero 2 years ago when I said they're going to be getting in the playoff all year after they lost to NIU. And then they forgot about that. And now I'm enemy number one because, like, I honestly believe that you just can't put Notre Dame in over Miami in that scenario. But the vitriol of that, I think, should play really well for drama. And I think it's going to be a big game, not only for the actual results of next season, but for program trajectory as well, which I get into.
All right. I'll let you run. We've kept you here for a bit. Two parting words here as it is March. We'll have you on again, I'm sure.
Sure.
What's a team right now? You mentioned drugs. What's a team right now that you're intoxicated by? You're like, I love this team. I love everything about them. And I'm not saying you're going to throw tons of money on them, but just a team that you've got your eye on that you just, the more you dig in, the more you love them.
I mean, if you're using drugs, like Texas is my drug. I mean, Texas has always been my drug. Texas has been my drug for 15 years. Because they recruit so well and have so many good players, and they were so dysfunctional for so long, it was almost confusing how they could have so many good players and none of them develop and none of them, and then they lose these random games in the Big 12. But if you look at Arch Manning, drug, Cam Coleman, drug, Hollywood Smothers, drug, Steve Sarkisian is a drug. I mean, if you look at like everything that Texas brings back on their defensive side too, like how are they not your favorite to win the national championship? Like, honestly, like I cannot get enough. I told Andy I would run 5 miles if Arch Manning isn't a Heisman finalist next year. I haven't run a whole mile, I think, since I was in high school. So like you want, you know, I'm actually like putting my like well-being at stake here because I could die.
What if he gets injured?
What?
Injury? What
maybe he'll let me off the hook if he gets injured. Okay. I hope that doesn't happen. But, you know, I think that Texas, while disappointed, again, kind of like Notre Dame in the sense that they felt that they were maybe worthy for a spot in the CFP last year and were left out. When you think about all the things that they learned from last year, the fact that it's Arch Manning's second year, the fact that they brought in the closest thing to Jeremiah Smith that exists in college football at receiver without being Jeremiah. Their running back room is better. Ryan Wingo returns. You got Colin Simmons on the defensive side of the ball. Like, I don't need to name off all the names, but they have one of the deepest, most talented teams in the country and a coach that I think has done a pretty good job of keeping them consistently good. Texas is the team that I would pick to win the national championship here on March 9th when we're recording this. Now, obviously, a lot can change and things don't always work out the way that you do, but the way I analyze the sport is who's got the most good players and who's got a good coach. Texas always checks those boxes for me, and that's my national championship pick.
Week 2, Texas, Ohio State. Not going to be not too shabby down there in Austin, huh?
Cannot wait. It's going to be a banger, and I think that Texas is going to be a home dog in that game. So maybe circle that one.
Early look right now at a national shop that has put out these lines. Texas is a 2.5 point favorite.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. They should be.
Yeah. So
somebody told me that they were a 3-point dog, and I was like, okay, thank you. I'll be taking that. But I guess they are home, and they have a lot of good players, and Ohio State lost a lot. But, you know, I think that they should be the favorite in that game, and I do think that they should be. I mean, where are they if you have them all up here, Tim? If you don't, it's bad podcasting. Sorry for putting you on the spot, but where are they on the national championship futures list?
If you look at DraftKings, Texas, Ohio State, Indiana, Notre Dame are all favored. They're all 7-1. So they kind of a bit of a cop out there, but those are your four favorites heading into the year. Oregon not too far behind. Georgia, it's kind of
who are the four?
Indiana, Texas, Ohio State, Notre Dame.
Indiana's still a favorite to win the national title next year.
Yeah.
That's wild.
FanDuel has it, Ari. Notre Dame is a slight favorite, plus 650. Ohio State, Texas, 7-1, and then Indiana plus 750.
Okay.
And then to make sure everyone's happy, the shirt that you're wearing, BetMGM, Ohio State is your favorite at 6-1. And then Notre Dame, Oregon, Texas are all 7-1.
Yeah, I want to know the calculus on the Indiana being the favorite to win the national championship, but maybe that's a good podcast conversation for me and Andy. Thanks for that. And thank you to BetMGM and letting me wear the shirt on the show. They're a title sponsor of our podcast, and I love talking about gambling, and I really appreciate you having me on today, Tim.
All right, so as I let you go, let people know about Andy and Ari, all your written content, because if you're a college football nut like we are all, where can we get your content?
We are at on3.com as the national staff. If you want to read our work, we write columns on top of it, and we do a daily podcast, Andy and Ari on 3. You can find that in any podcast player that you listen to, and of course on YouTube where we're trying to boost our numbers. But yeah, we talk about college football year-round, 24/7, basically, and we'd love to have you join us if you like what you hear today. So you probably hated what you heard, so you probably won't listen. But if you liked what you heard, please check us out. And I appreciate you, Tim. Thank you.
Ari, you're the man. That's Ari Wasserman. I'm Tim Murray. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Thanks to Ryan Hunter. Thanks to Wyatt Tomchek. Thanks to all of you. Once again, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, check us out. We'll be up and running all throughout the offseason as well. This has been another episode of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.